You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. We just heard from a woman we're calling Jasmine. She's an Iraqi refugee in San Jose who's struggling with PTSD and depression. Many Middle Eastern refugees are Iraqis who, like Jasmine, have fled war-related violence. But in the past decade, the largest number of refugees in California have actually come from Iran. More than 15,000 Iranians have moved to the Golden State since 2006. Though their country isn't currently at war, many Iranians suffer religious and political persecution. And they face many of the same social and cultural taboos about seeking mental health care as Iraqi refugees. In this next segment, reporter Shuka Kalantari tells us how one woman has overcome those barriers and how others might do the same.
Azini Zadifar is a 45-year-old Iranian refugee living alone in a small studio apartment in San Jose. Izadifar has shoulder-length black hair with a few gray streaks that she keeps tied in a bun. When she opens the door, she's smiling.
Hello. Salam, hi, how are you?
Izadifar came to the U.S. in 2009 seeking asylum. She says that's the first time she ever saw a psychologist, though there were signs she might have needed to earlier.
When I was in Iran, and even up to probably a year ago, at a certain time during the night, I would wake up. You know, I would wake up shouting, like having nightmares. I always had this problem.
Izadifar spent the ages of 16 to 19 in Iran's infamous Evin prison. She knew she carried the memories of that time with her, but it wasn't until she came to the U.S. that she realized she had been living with PTSD for nearly three decades.
It had become so normal for me that I couldn't even understand that there was a problem there. I had a sleep disorder, you know, and it could be related to the trauma I had in prison. Then I realized, okay, that's a sign of PTSD.
Izadifar wouldn't have always used the term PTSD. It's not as common in Iranian culture. Dr. Lauren Crane is a psychologist working with refugees. He says refugees like Izadifar often don't seek therapy because of deep cultural taboos.
In most other countries, people associate psychologists and psychiatrists with really severe mental illness.
Crane says some cultures don't see conditions like depression as a chronic disease. It's more like a temporary problem.
And for problems in living, they might go to a respected family member. They might go to, in some cases, an imam or religious leader. In other cases, they might go to a medical doctor.
It's hard for many to accept the idea that mental health problems may require specialized treatment. Refugee Azini Zadifar says many who do get therapy often keep it a secret from their community.
We are not very much open-minded when it comes to mental health issues, but there's a tendency in our culture to underestimate that and say, okay, that was past. Now we are in a free society. We have to live our lives. We have to get a job and buy a car and just be normal.
It's taken a long time to realize, but her past experiences remain very much in the present. She was a young teenager after the Iranian Revolution of 1979. Like many of her peers, she participated in secret meetings and demonstrations against the country's new Islamic government. But before long, she was arrested. She still remembers her first few weeks in the prison while she waited to be interrogated.
I was sitting there behind that door and waiting for my turn and just hearing people screaming, shouting, crying, begging not to be tortured and stuff like that.
Izadifar was eventually placed in a small cell along with dozens of other female prisoners. She says sometimes the room was so crowded they would have to take turns sleeping at night, because there wasn't enough space for all of them to lie down at the same time.
I witnessed at least seven of my cellmates completely go crazy, losing their minds.
She says even though she never had a moment alone, prison life kept her completely isolated. She says the more people knew about each other, the more likely they'd be tortured for that information. She still remembers one time when someone did speak.
It was a rainy day, and another stalemate of mine, she was 17, I was almost the same age. It was just us walking, and we were all wet. And I don't know why, she started telling me her whole life story, how she was brought up, how many sisters and brothers she had, how she was involved in this political group. And then our time was up and we had to come back. And so we came back to the room and they called her and they took her and they executed her. So the next morning, I woke up with gunshots, hearing these voices. And I clearly remember that I opened my eyes. I told myself, no, she's not executed. She's living somewhere. It's not happening. And I just go back to sleep.
After that day, Izadifar stopped talking to her cellmates. She was released 2 years later and more or less went on with her life. She married and moved to Austria, where she began working on Iranian human rights campaigns for Amnesty International. But when her marriage ended, she realized she couldn't survive alone in Austria, and she couldn't go back to Iran. She decided to seek asylum in California. It wasn't an easy decision.
Although I didn't have any other choices, but, you know, if you get asylum, you cannot go back to your own country. You cannot see your family. You cannot see your friends. It's not an easy decision.
As part of the refugee process, once she arrived in the U.S., Izadifar had to visit an immigration lawyer and prove why she couldn't return to Iran. But every time she tried to talk to her lawyer about her time in prison, she would start crying.
I wanted to start to tell her my case, and I couldn't. I had an appointment for 30 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, and all that time I was crying. I couldn't finish a sentence. And she said, you know, you have to go for therapy. This is urgent for you. This is what you need.
On the advice of her lawyer, Izadifar began to get counseling at the Center for Survivors of Torture in San Jose, also known as CST. Izadifar says she sees many of her same symptoms in other Iranian refugees.
I can clearly see that how the traumas that these refugees, these asylees have gone through is still affecting them.
Not everyone in Izadifar's position seeks therapy. Dr. Lauren Crane says many people fear being judged
as having something wrong with them, even though I think all members of their community would be sympathetic because they're struggling with the same issues and having many of the same symptoms.
Crane has been working with refugees for over two decades. He started out taking a traditional Western approach to treating them.
What are you here for? What are your presenting symptoms? When did these symptoms start? Have you had prior psychiatric history?
But he said he quickly realized that this wouldn't work. So instead, he frames the questions to focus on quality of life issues, like how they're doing finding housing or work.
In the course of our conversations, naturally, they will tell me about the difficulties that they're having, which are often related to their symptoms of depression and PTSD. But I'm not framing it as a psychological evaluation. So they're much more willing to talk with me about what their experience is here.
Another big barrier to mental health care is access. Refugees with minors in their families get 5 years of free services, including health care. But refugees without kids only qualify for 8 months of services. So, in less than a year, they need to find a job, a home, and learn English, all while possibly dealing with the symptoms of PTSD.
Practical and psychological support is often works best when working with the refugee population.
Sally Sherrick is a therapist at CST. She says only after addressing their basic needs can refugees even begin to think about mental health. But it's not always easy to get them into the office. So sometimes, Sherrick goes to them. Inside a small waiting room at the Lenzen Health Clinic, a handful of refugees are waiting to see a therapist. Sherrick and others provide free sessions here.
So this is where patients come after they've met with the medical doctors and had a physical exam.
Down the hall from the waiting room, Sherrick is standing in a small exam room sparsely decorated with a world map.
They're familiar with this setting, which is what makes it a lot easier for them to meet with a therapist here. It breaks down a lot of the stigma and obstacles and barriers.
Sharik says she spends a long time gaining the trust of her refugee clients.
Building rapport is kind of like the first step towards engaging them in any conversations about mental health.
CST uses other unique methods to reach out to Middle Eastern refugees, like hosting potlucks and educational seminars. To make that approach work, they rely on refugees like Azini Zadifar. She's now doing outreach to other Iranian refugees in the San Jose area. She goes to cultural events and hands out Farsi-language pamphlets about the free therapy at CST. She also hosts events on nutrition in the U.S., education, and other topics of practical value. Izadifar says reaching out to other refugees helps her deal with her own past trauma.
The wound will always be there, but there's a difference between a wound that is not healed, that has not been exposed to the sun, to a wound that is being healed and now you see a scar. You know, it's different. The wound will be there, but you're not as sensitive and it's not as painful.
She's also using writing as an outlet. Right now, she's working on her memoir. She says those stories aren't hard to remember.
A part of, especially people who have been in prison, a part of us is still in the prison. Even if you are living in a beautiful land like California, a big part of your being can still be in that prison.
After being released from Iran's prison, it took Izadifar almost 30 years to make it to California. But in some ways, she's only now leaving. For Cross Currents, I'm Shuka Kalantari.